So today's daf is Psachim, daf Yud Aleph. We're going to start in the bottom of Yud Amud Beis, second to last line. We have a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to whether you could search for Chametz after Chametz becomes Aser Bahana. I'm sorry, Aser Bachila. After Chametz becomes, you can't eat it on midday of Erev Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda says no, and the Chachamim say that you can even search for Chametz after Chatzos and Pesach. Gemara says, "Amikas Rabbi Yehuda Dilmasi Lamechel Minei." Does Rabbi Yehuda typically make a gzeira when it comes to forbidden food that you shouldn't involve yourself with forbidden food because you might come to eat it, and that's why you can't search for chametz after the time when it becomes aser min haTorah? V'hatidah behold, we're learning Mishnah Menachos. Misha Kara va'Omer Yotzi Molti Meshuke Yushlaim Shehem Aleim Kevach V'Kali. That grain that dried up in an oven from the new grain before Yom Tov, so you can it's cut and it's ground and it's dried, and shelo biratzon chachamim, but this was not with the will of the chachamim. Why? Because the new grain was forbidden to be eaten until after the omer was brought, and apparently, immediately after the korban omer was brought on the 16th of Nisan, which is when the new grain was permitted, people were already buying it in the marketplace. Meaning, this new grain was, even though technically it was only forbidden to be eaten before the 16th of Nisan, before the korban omer was brought. However, beforehand, people were harvesting it and grinding it. And the Chum were not happy because they were concerned that you might, if you do that, then what might you do? You might eat it. So they make a gzera that you shouldn't involve yourself in it. Divar Meir, that's from Meir. You know Meir. Britzon Chum Hayosim. Rabbi Yehuda had no problem with people handling the new grain when it was still forbidden. So the Gemara now is going to say, "V'lo kagazar Rabbi Yehuda dilma asi lemechaminei." So how come Rabbi Yehuda allows you to harvest and grind the grain when it is still forbidden to be eaten when it comes to the halacha of chadash, and yet when it comes to searching for chametz, the Rabbi Yehuda was not in favor of, would forbade you from searching for chametz and handling the chametz after it was forbidden to be eaten? So why the difference? So Rava shani chadash mitoch shel itarta lo ela ayde kituf. He says that chodesh is different because you only allowed you to detach it by cutting the stalks by hand and not harvesting with a kli. So since you're doing it with the shino in an unusual manner, so then you're going to remember that you're not going to eat it. So that's why chodesh is different than chametz. However, by chametz, there's nothing to remind you not to eat it. So we're concerned that when you're searching for it, then you might eat it. Amalei Abaye, Abaye says to right. I mean, you could say that at some point, right? I mean, listen, at some point in the process, though, we allow you to involve yourself in the whole process, even at the end process. So at some point, it will be fit to be eaten. In other words, they don't, you're right, you can say maybe you can only harvest it, but you can't grind it. But say they allow you to basically, you know, harvest it and grind it into flour and, you know, basically, sell it, you know, wholesale in stores or retail in stores. So they allow you to basically have the finished product. I mean, who does not consider about having the finished product? Even on the 16th of Nisan. So Amalei Abaye says, back to Rabbi, Tenach Bishas Ktifa. So I understand that there is no concern. You might eat it when you harvest it, but Tchid of Arkada, when you grind it and you sift it, Michael Meir, what can you say? What kind of, there's no shinoi there, and there you might eat it, and Rabbi Yehuda why is he not concerned about that? Halokash etchidavarechai diyada kadal gabenafa. So again, you would do these processes also with a shino. You'd grind it with a hand mill, or not with a water mill, and you would sift it on top of a sieve, you turn it upside down. You do it in an unusual manner. Rava Abai still asks the Rava. Ella hadit nan kotrim beish hashlachim sheba makim velo goldshim. So the Mishnah Menachos says that you're allowed to harvest before the before harvesting the Omer with a normal magal, like a normal sickle, and you're allowed to the new grain of in a field that needs to be watered, like an irrigated field, and also the grain in the valleys, because harvesting is not forbidden before the Omer. The grain from which you bring it for the Omer, that harvesting is forbidden. But grain that you would not bring for the Omer, because they're not the choicest, so then you would be allowed to right? You would be allowed to harvest the good grain, but you're not allowed to harvest the grain that you don't bring from the Omer, because that's not the choices of a low goldshin. But you can't make piles into them before bringing the Omer. So even the grain that you wouldn't bring, you still can't put them in piles. Vukimda k'Rabbi Yehuda. And we establish this like Rabbi Yehuda, Maika Lamemar. So what can you say here? Because Rabbi Yehuda allows you to do harvesting in a situation where you can't eat the grain. And here's a case where you harvested it normally. So we're giving a second answer. Elamar Baye, Chadash Badal Minei, Chametz Lo Badal Minei. By Chadash, since you separate from it the whole year, until you bring the Omer, and you don't typically eat it, so we're not concerned that if you handle it, you're going to eat it, because you separate yourself from throughout the year. However, chametz, that since it's only forbidden one week a year, you don't typically separate yourself from it, so therefore we're more concerned that when you're handling the chametz, that you will eat it, and therefore after chatzos, midday on Erev Pesach, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to search for it. Amar Rava, Rava says, "Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, kasha, Rabbanan lo kasha." So he says that was there only a question on Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? What about the Rabbanan's position? Because the Rabbanan held that chametz you're allowed to handle, but our Mishnah, which is Rabbi Meir, who represents the Chachamim, they held that you were not allowed to handle the chadash before the korban was brought. So there they are concerned that you might come to eat it. So why, by the case of Chadash, they held the opposite of Yehuda, and they held that you were not allowed to handle the Chadash. And here, by the Chametz, they held that you are allowed to handle the Chametz in Erev Pesach. So it's a question on that. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, lo kasha kedishanin. Okay, we answered Rabbi Yehuda's thing. We answered Rabbi Yehuda's discrepancy that chametz is a person would not separate from it the rest of the year, so we need extra precautions, as opposed to chadash, where you don't need those extra precautions. Now, Rabbanan lo kasha is not a question of the Rabbanan either. Why? Hu atzum machazer alav l'sarfo. Mechal ka'achel minei. He says that by they're only concerned by chadash, because what are you doing when you come into chadash? You are harvesting it and you're grinding the flour and you're going to eat it. So we're concerned that while you're handling the chadash, you're actually going to end up eating the chadash because you're going to eat it soon. But what are you doing by chametz? When you're searching for the chametz, you're not searching for it to eat it. You're searching to burn it. So therefore, you're going to eat it. You're searching to burn it. You're gonna be eating it. The bedikas chametz is for the burning. So that's gonna remind you of the prohibition. And we're not concerned that you're gonna eat the chametz. Ravashi is gonna give a third answer. Ravashi Amar Behuda Lo Kasha Kemach V'Kali Tanan. The Mishnah in Menachos is talking about flour and this, I guess, toasted grain or roasted grain. So only with those foods, Rabbi Yehuda allows you to involve yourself in chadash, because they were not considered you're going to eat it, because they're not fit for eating. That's sort of like what Judah wanted to say. I mean, a little bit. He wanted to say when you harvest it, it's not fit. So he's saying the type of foods that we allow you to handle when it comes to Chodesh are only foods that are not fit to be eaten. The Gemara rejects that. Hadarava Ashi Badusahi. This is not true. Hatena Kali Ve'elach. I understand from the time that the grain becomes dries in the oven and it's not fit to be eaten until you make bread. But Meikara, but beforehand from the harvesting, Ad Kali, you know, before it's placed in the oven, and you just harvested, Michael, what can you say? So yes, after it's toasted in the oven, you toast it, and then after that, you're going to grind it, and you're going to the dry grain, and you're going to make it into flour. Fine. So after that point, after it becomes dried in the oven, so then it's not fit to be eaten. But after it's harvested, it's at that point it's fit to be eaten. So why are you not concerned that you might come to eat it? V'chitei ma'ide kituf. If you want to say, okay, maybe you're going to harvest it in a way that's unusual, so you're going to remember not to eat it. Kid the Rava. So we like what Rava answered above. Ela kotzu beitzah shlong sheba machim ukim da Rabbi Yehuda Michael Meir. Yeah, but we gave the same question because we have the Mishnah Menachos, which says that you can harvest normally, like Rabbi Yehuda. So what do you say? Ela Ravashi b'dusahi. So rather, Ravashi is not a good answer, and therefore we give the answer. Only the second answer remains. That Chodesh is lo bedile, is bedile anshemine, that people separate from Chodesh the whole year. So we're not concerned that if you handle it, that you're going to eat it. But Chometz, since you, the whole year you eat it, except for 1 week, we're concerned that if we allow you to handle it, then you might eat it. That's why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow you to do bedikas Chometz after Chometz becomes forbidden to be eaten after Chatzos midday on the 14th of Nisan. V'Gemara now asks an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and Chametz from another place. V'chol heichad lo badil migaz Rabbi Yehuda. Is it true that any forbidden food that we don't separate from Rabbi Yehuda makes a gzeira, they may come to eat it? V'hatanan, we have a Mishnah. Lo yikav adam shofer shal beitza v'malam shev v'yitnena b'tzad haner b'shvel shetehe mina tefes. So, in Maseches Shabbos it says that you're not allowed to make a hole in an eggshell and then place oil in the and fill it up with the eggshell with oil and put by the side of the lamp and put it by the side of a lamp so that the oil will drip from use it as a lamp, and then basically you make a hole, and then you have oil dripping out while the wick is burning, and because of the hole, so then the fire will go out easier. And because of this, you connect the eggshell to the lamp so that the wick will burn and then it will continue to burn. It won't go out. The Chacham do not allow you to do this because they're concerned that maybe you're going to take from the oil in the eggshell. So now that right now, what do you have? You have this eggshell that's connected to the lamp, and the oil and the lamp is getting. Is getting fuel from the oil in the eggshell. We're concerned that since they're two separate parts, the eggshell is really not part of the lamp, you may take from the oil and then you will violate the prohibition of kibuy on Shabbos, of extinguishing on Shabbos. There are two different opinions as to why you would violate the prohibition of extinguishing on Shabbos. Is it really gram kibuy because you're simply removing the fuel source? Or if you remove the oil from a lamp, then maybe the light will not bright as shinely. That'll be real kibuy. In any case, and the Gemara says that, and this Mishnah says, v'afilu shel cheres, and even if the eggshell is made of even if it's of earthenware, that the oil inside of it is disgusting, and you're not concerned that people will consume the oil from the eggshell. Nevertheless, the Chachamim were concerned that you might come to take the oil from it, and they would violate kibbutz of Rabbi Yehuda Mati. Rabbi Yehuda allows you to do this. So what do we see? We see Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned that you're going to take the oil from the from these separate eggshell, even though people typically use the oil and they don't separate from it. So why by chametz is there a concern that you may come to eat it? Why do we say that by Rabbi Huda says by chametz we're concerned that you may come to eat it, and therefore we don't allow you to search for the chametz? So in other words, lo bedile minche by chametz, lo bedile inche from the shemen. So why is Rabbi Huda lenient when it comes to the oil here, but he's not lenient when it comes to the chametz? So the Gemara answers, hasa mishum chumra d'shabbos midal bedile. So Rabbi Huda says that because of the strict prohibition of Shabbos, people separate from the oil, and we're not concerned that if you make this contraption connecting the eggshell to the lamp, such that the wick, which is connected to the eggshell, draws the oil from it, we're not concerned you're going to take the oil from the eggshell because you're aware of the stricture of Shabbos. However, chametz is not as strict as Shabbos, and therefore we are concerned that you might come to eat it. So the Gemara says, "Urmid the Shabbos a Shabbos." So we have a question from this Mishnah, another halacha that Rabbi Huda argues with the Chachamim in a brisa. The Tanya, Chevel Deli. So let's say you have this rope that you're connected of a pail that you use to draw water from a pit. Shenifsak. So let's say it snapped, it broke in the middle. Lo yehei koshro. You're not allowed to tie it on Shabbos, because that's a Torah prohibition of Kshira. Ella onvo, you're allowed to make a bow. And the rabbis did not make a decree not to make a bow, so that because it might lead to Kshira. Omer, korech alav punda, o pesakya vachal yad venu. Says you connect the two ends, and you sort of tie in it some kind of like belt, I guess, or some kind of belt, but you shouldn't make a bow. So Rabbi Huda is more strict. So Rabbi Huda does not allow you to make a real bow because of the gzeira, because it might lead to kshira. Kasha Huda ad Rabbi Huda, kasha ad Rabbi. It's a question on Rabbi Huda. Why? Because by the shvoferes, Rabbi Huda is not concerned. Right? He allows you to place the eggshell next to the lamp and to draw oil from the eggshell. He's not concerned that you're going to take the oil. Because you know Shabbos is very strict, so we're not concerned that you're going to do anything wrong. So how come here in the case of the rope where he doesn't allow you to make the bow, well, he's concerned you're going to end up making a real kasher? So that seems to be inconsistent, because he's concerned in the case of kshira, he's not concerned in the case of the eggshell case. And it's also a question of the Rabbanon, that why the Rabbanon make the decree when it comes to the oil case with the shvoferes, but they didn't make it gzeir when it comes to the bow case. So the Rabbanon wrote a lo kasha. The Rabbanon, it's not a question why. Shemen b'shemen michlaf. And even b'kshira lo michlaf. When it comes to oil, they will, since you typically use oil, so you're going to be using oil on Shabbos. So you're going to run out of oil in your cupboard, and you'll take oil from this eggshell, and you're likely to forget. So there, we're going to make a gzera. We're making gzera that you want more oil for your food on Shabbos, and you will mistakenly take the oil that's in the eggshell. So that's a legitimate concern. Therefore, the rabbis do not allow you to make this kind of contraption. However, when it comes to tying a bow versus making a real knot, we're not concerned. People will not say, "Oh, because I'm allowed to make a bow on Shabbos, so I'm allowed to make a knot on Shabbos." That we're not concerned about. Now, Rabbi Huda, we're not going to consider Rabbi Huda as well. Why? Time Rabbi Huda, la mishum legazar aniva to kshira. Ela mishum legazar aniva gufei kshira him. No. The reason why Rabbi Huda does not allow you to make a bow is not because he's concerned that maybe a bow is going to lead to a real knot. Rabbi Huda holds that a bow itself is considered kshira, and that is an av malacha. That itself is an isser doraisa. It's not based on the gzer because it might lead to something. Now we're going to ask a question of the Rabbanon, an apparent steer, an apparent contradiction, because they said that you're allowed to make a bow on Shabbos. We're not concerned you're going to make a knot. Deditnan. So what's the concern? Koshin li bifsakya avalo b'chevel Rabbi Huda matir. So the Rabbanon say that you're allowed to make a knot on Shabbos, of a, you're allowed to tie on Shabbos a pitcher with this kind of belt, right? And so it's not a kesher shekayama, it's not a permanent knot, but you can't tie it with a rope because you might leave it there forever, that it might be a kesher shekayama, which would be forbidden on Shabbos. Rabbi Huda Mater, Rabbi Huda, says that this would be permitted. So the Chevel Demai. Now we try to investigate what type of rope are we talking about. So the Gemara asks the following. If you want to say it's a rope that you typically use, like a regular rope that you tie at the lead, the Rabbi Huda Mater, Rabbi Huda really allow you in this case to tie it. So this is a kesher shekayama, it's a permanent knot, and certainly we should be concerned that you may come to be mevatel your and if it's a real rope, so you may end up actually making it permanent and making it nullified to the dli and make it part of the pitcher to leave it there permanently. So that can't be. It can't be that Rabbi Yehuda would say that that case is permitted. So that cannot be the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Ela pshita, so rather, what must it be talking about? It's the gardi. It's more of like a weaver's rope. That it's not made to fill water, in a permanent fashion, and therefore we're not concerned that you're going to leave it. It's not made to connect to a pitcher to use it for water. It's probably not that thick. It's probably not that strong, and you're not going to keep it there forever. So gazur rabbanon chevel de gardi atu chevel d'alma. So you see, the rabbis made a decree from a rope, a weaver's rope that you can't use because you might use a regular rope. So therefore what? So therefore, why in the Mishnah do they allow you to make a bow, and they didn't make a gzera of a bow because of kshira, and yet they made a gzera of chevel de gardi, a weaver's rope, because it might lead you to use a regular rope. So the Gemara says, yeah, chevel b'chevel michlaf, ani b'kshir lo michlaf. Yeah, it's simple that if we allow, we are concerned that if we allow you to use a weaver's rope to tie your pitcher, tie your bucket, so then you might end up saying, oh, I can use a weaver's rope, I can also use a regular rope. But they're not going to say, oh, I'm allowed to make a bow, so I'm also allowed to make a knot. That we're not concerned about. So Gemara asks, is it true that any prohibition that people separate from, like Chadash, Rabbi Huda does not make a gzera? V'atanan, b'chor she'achaz el dam, afilu meis, ein makizin lo dam. So what's the case here? So let's say you have the bechor of a behema tahora. So you have a bechor, it's kadosh, right? So, and let's say it has a lot of blood, and because of that, it's potentially dangerous. Even if it would die without bloodletting, we do not allow you to bloodlet a bechor behema tahora. It's kadosh, and it's to be brought on the mizbeach. And if a blemish happens to the animal, if it develops a blemish, a mum, then it's invalid to bring as a korban. It can be eaten anywhere. But you are not allowed to, put a blemish on the animal, a mum on the animal. You can't do that yourself. You can't make a mum on the animal. So therefore, you're not allowed to bloodlet a bechor behema tahora, even if, what? By you not doing it, the animal would die. That's Rabbi Huda. And he says more than that. You're even not allowed to bloodlet even in a place that doesn't make a mum, because we're concerned that if we allow you to bloodlet the animal in a place where there's not a mum, you might end up bloodletting where the place where there is a mum. That's Rabbi Huda's position, and the Chachamim say that you are allowed to, that we're not concerned. So what do we see here? We see that Rabbi Huda does not allow you to... Rabbi Huda does not allow you to make a mum. I'm sorry, does not allow you to bloodlet an animal. Gezeira atu, gezeira, that you might make a mum. Wait a second. Aren't you badal minei? Don't you separate from a behema, b'chor behema tahora all the time. You don't typically use it. So why by chadash is Rabbi Yehuda lenient and Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned when it comes to chadash that you're allowed to harvest and you're allowed to harvest the new grain before while still you can't eat it, and we're not concerned with handling chadash, but Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about bloodletting a bechor behema because there you might end up inflicting a movement on the animal. Why are we concerned in the case of the bechor? So hasa mitok sha'adam bahu amamono. Says that Rabbi Yehuda says the following: when it comes to bloodletting an animal, you're concerned about your money, that you want to save the animal. Your animal is very expensive, and therefore we would say that we're concerned that if you allow the Kohen who owns the Bechor to bloodlet the animal in a place where there's no mum, no blemish, he might end up doing it even in a place where there is a mum because he wants to save his property. He doesn't want the animal to potentially develop a mum, and he wants to save the animal. He doesn't want the animal to die. And so it's because you want to save your property and you don't want the animal to die. So then maybe by mistake, unintentionally, you might bloodlet the animal in a place where you typically make a mum. So specifically in this case, Rabbi Yehuda makes this gzeira, this decree. Av Rabbanan, what about the Rabbanan? They argue, they allow you to bloodlet the animal when there's no mum. He says the opposite. If you don't allow any type of way to remedy the situation, even to allow the animal to bloodlet where it doesn't make a mum, then we're certainly concerned that because you want to save your property, if you don't allow him to do anything, he's not going to listen to you, and then he's going to say what? There's no difference between bloodletting in a place where it doesn't make a mum and a place where it does make a mum. So they're just going to bloodlet in a place where it does make a mum. So Chacham say better take the risk. And tell him, okay, fine, we'll allow you to bloodlet, but only in a place where that will not make a mum. Because if you don't allow him at all, then he will likely, because he wants to save his money, do the bloodletting even in a place where it will lead to a mum. So now the Gemara asks, Umi Amrinan, the Rabbi Yehuda Adam Balma Monar. Do we say that Rabbi Yehuda says that a person is concerned, is so nervous about his money that we're concerned he's going to violate a prohibition? Vatnan. Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein Makadrin Behabehema Beyom Tov Bnei Shehu Ose Bechaburo. So what happens here? So the Rabbi Yehuda says that you cannot scrape an animal on a Yom Tov with a fine tooth comb to remove the dirt on it, because by doing that you're going to make a wound. But you're allowed to scratch an animal with a wider comb because it doesn't inflict a wound. Ein mekartzifim. So he says you can't do either. V'tanya ezel kidur ve'ezel kirtzuf. What's between kidur and kirtzuf? Kidur biktanim. Kidur is with a comb that has very thin teeth, and v'osim chabur, they make a wound. V'kirtzuf gedolim, and the kirtzuf is with larger teeth. V'ein osim chabur, they don't make a wound. Okay. So what do we see from here? That Yehuda does not forbid you to do kirtzuf. And we're not concerned that by scraping it with a wide tooth comb, you're going to end up scraping with a thin tooth comb and then making a wound. Aren't we concerned a person is nervous about his money, that he wants to remove the dirt from the animal, and then maybe he's going to use the wrong implement? So Hasam Dishavaklei Mayas. The Gemara answers no. There, when it comes to Bechor, that if you don't do anything, the animal's going to die. If you don't bloodlet, the animal's going to die. There we're going to say a person will be concerned about his money, and therefore we're concerned that he's going to make a he's going to bloodlet in a place where he's going to make a blemish, a mum. But here the animal's just dirty and the animal's in pain. So there, if you leave the animal without combing it, it's simply tsar. There's no, it's going to be pain for the animal. There's no
danger, the animal's going to die. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we don't say, lo amrinan, adam bal mamono, but then we don't say that a person's so nervous about his money and he's going to end up doing something wrong. Rabbi Yehuda, maishna gabe chometz de gazer, maishna gabe kitzut de lo gazer. What's the difference between chometz that Rabbi Yehuda made a decree not to search for it after the time that it's prohibited because you might come to eat it? And what's the difference when it comes to kirtzuf, where we're combing it, where Yehuda did not make a similar gzeira? So lechem belechem michlef. So a person will make a mistake between the bread of matzah and the bread of chametz, and we're concerned. And you might think that this is matzah because once you're searching for chametz, you may find something and say, oh, this is probably maybe this is matzah, and then you may come to eat it. And so therefore, we don't allow you to, remember, I assume in those days they probably made Sephardi matzah, you know, where the matzah may have looked like chametz. So we say, don't search for chametz after 6 hours. Because if you start searching and then you find chametz, you might mistake and say, oh, this is probably matzah, you might eat it. But kider b'kitzur lo michlef, a person, when he's combing with the larger comb, he's not going to make a mistake with the shorter comb, and it will not lead to, and we're not concerned that he's going to end up making a wound on the animal on Yom Tov. Now we're continuing. Mishnah says the following. The Mishnah said, now from a Torah perspective, chametz is asur from chatzos, midday chatzos on the 14th, end of the 6th hour, but the chamim added times where you can't benefit from chametz, can't eat chametz. So Rav Meir Omer, Ochlim kol chametz v'sar from tchilas shesh. Rav Meir says you can eat chametz the entire 5th hour and you burn it at the beginning of the 6th hour. Yehuda Omer, Ochlim kol arba, you can eat the entire 4th hour. V'tolim kol chametz, and the 5th hour you just let it hang. You don't eat it, but you don't have to destroy it. V'sar from tchilas shesh, and you burn at the beginning of the 6th hour. Odomar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda also says, Shtei chalos shel Torah, 2 loaves of bread of the Korban Torah psulos that were invalid, that munachos al gabe itzdava, they were placed on Erev Pesach we're going to explain what the itzdava was. Gemara is going to explain what the itzdava is. They were placed on top of the it's like a bench, we'll explain more what it is, on Erev Pesach by Har HaBayis, that people would gather and sit there, and that was like a sign. Kozban Shemunachos, as long as both loaves of the Korban Torah were there, Kolam Ochlim, everyone would eat chametz. Nila Achas, so once one was removed, so Tolin Lo Ochlim Lo Sarfim, they wouldn't eat any chametz, but they wouldn't have to burn it yet, it was still permitted by Na. But once both loaves were taken, so then chilu kolam sarfin, so then everyone would burn their chametz. So that was like a sign, that was like a clock, that was like a clock to tell you when chametz was permitted to be eaten, forbidden to be eaten, and obligated to be destroyed. Omer chulin. I don't know, but probably most people. But I would assume most people were in. I don't know, but most people were in Yerushalayim doing the Korban Pesach. So that's probably why they had this sign. I guess you don't have to know, you don't have to make that sign. Okay, so I don't know. Maybe they're more machmir. They might have been more machmir, but there's a lot of people gathering, so that's something that they did. It's not a chiyuv to do it. It was just that since there were a lot of people there, they thought they would show everyone what to do. Manglil Omer Chulin Necholim Kol Arba. Chulin of chametz is was eaten then of the four hours. Truma Kol Chametz. Truma of chametz could be eaten the entire 5th hour. V'sar b'tchila sheish, and you burn it at the beginning of the 6th hour. Why? Because you're not allowed to destroy chametz as long as you're allowed to eat it. So you couldn't have this position where. Therefore, they only, because you couldn't destroy it as long as you can eat it, and therefore they only moved up the time when you couldn't eat it only 1 hour, because that's when most people made mistakes. But they weren't concerned about the 2nd hour for Truma. The Gemara is going to say about how much would you make a mistake, and that's the discussion now between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Tanan Hasam. So Echad Omer Bishtayim Bechodesh VeEchad Omer Bishloshei Dusim Kayemet. So let's say One person said on the second day of the month, a person killed someone else, and another witness said, no, it was the third of the month. Their testimony is good. Because one person knows that the previous month was 30 days, and one person doesn't know about that the previous month was 30 days, and therefore they're really speaking about the same day. They're testifying about the same day. But if one says that the murder happened on the third of the month, one said the fifth of the month, then their testimony is invalid because you wouldn't make a mistake of 2 days. Echad Omer b'shtei shals. Echad Omer b'shal shals. One person said it happened the second hour of the day. One person said it happened the third hour of the day. Eidus kayemes. Okay, people can. That's a valid testimony because people can make a mistake with 1 hour. Echad Omer b'shal shals. Echad Omer b'chamish. One said it happened in the third hour. One says it happened in the fifth hour. Eidus b'tail. That's invalid. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, Eidus kayemes. Their testimony is valid. Because you can make a mistake with 2 hours. That's reasonable. Echad Omer b'chamish, echad Omer b'sheva. If one says the fifth hour, one says the seventh hour, eidus b'tel. That is clearly invalid. Shebechamish echama b'mizrach, v'sheva chama b'tzadmarav. Because the fifth hour, the sun's on the eastern side, and the seventh hour, the sun's on the western side. So people would not make that mistake. Omer Abaye. Abaye says, k'shetim salomar l'divrei Rameir enam toav v'lo klum. According to Rabbi Meir, a person does not make a mistake at all. According to Rabbi Yehuda, people would make a mistake for 1/2 hour. He's going to explain. According to Meir, nobody makes a mistake. What happened? The deed happened at the end of the second hour, the beginning of the third hour. When one witness said it happened the second hour, what does he mean? The end of the second hour. The person who said the third hour, it means the beginning of the third hour. Udir Rabbi Yehuda, contra Rabbi Yehuda, Adam Toa Chatzisha, a person makes a mistake with a half an hour. Maisiki Hava, when that deed happened, but Palgad Arba Hava, it happened in the middle of the fourth hour. In other words, after 3.5 hours. Haideka Omar Shalosh, the person who said the third hour, what's his intent? Bisov Shalosh, he said the end of the third, Vikatoi Palgad Shaita Lakame, and then he made a mistake with a half hour. So when he said the third, he meant the end of the third. So he made a mistake. It really happened, right, after 3.5 hours. And the person who said the fifth hour, he means the beginning of the fifth hour. And he meant the beginning of the fifth hour, and he made a mistake. It was 1/2 hour late. So it really happened after 4.5 hours. So a person would only make a mistake 1/2 hour. This is how one way of understanding the debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. We will see the other way that they understand this debate, God willing, tomorrow. This is a good place to stop. We'll continue the debate, God willing, tomorrow.